Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. If you're not a business maverick, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of this podcast. In this podcast, we teach entrepreneurs how to defeat the corporate giant. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath, not by fighting a giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology. A slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I am a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and the managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I'm also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business, a strategy can take it global. During our last podcast, episode 9, we talked with Sarah George Durham, a Wix ambassador and founder of the brand building consulting firm 3-4 Corporation. Sarah George is a dynamic business leader and a brand builder who rides a Harley and spends her weekends as an amateur boxer. She is one of Wix.com's very first U.S. ambassador, and in this interview, she shared some incredible ninja techniques on how to use the free platform to build your Guerrillapreneur brand. She shared techniques on how to use the Wix.com search engine optimization tools to optimize your website and get more traffic. In fact, she references clients where she was able to reduce the Google AdWords spend from $600 a month to zero just by using the Wix.com SEO wizard. That's fascinating. Finally, she made us aware of free tools that Wix.com has made available, like online chat and online booking, that customers can use to interact with their customers real time. Using Wix.com, there's no reason why a David cannot compete with a Goliath. Please check out episode 9 on iTunes, Podomatic, SoundCloud, or streaming at Sierra.com. In today's episode, we're going to focus on Guerrillapreneur news. News about the sharing, gig, and circular loop economy that is expected to grow to $335 billion by 2025. $335 billion by 2025 is an amazing number. But there's more going on than just the growth in the sharing economy. According to ValueWalk, 50% of the S&P 500 could be extinct due to this collaborative boom. There are 12 broad industry sectors which account for an aggregate of $6 trillion or 8% of the global GDP that are at risk of disruption over the long term, according to Bank of America's analysis. This disruption will only be compounded by the advance of technology which supports the sharing economy. Why am I telling you this? Because this podcast, Guerrillapreneur News, is going to highlight the companies that are going to be at the forefront of the S&P 500 by 2025. What's first in Guerrillapreneur News? My favorite company, Airbnb, back in the news, and they've decided to buy a background check company called Trolley. Trolley is a different type of a background check company. They have search bots that go out through the internet and build media profiles. And Airbnb has decided to bring that tool in-house so that they can screen their host and minimize some of the risks that they have from lawsuits from hosts who discriminate, quite frankly, against people who don't look like them or aren't from their country. Airbnb hopes that this tool will give them enough information to decide who they keep on the platform and who they will reject. Now, I also see this as a larger trend that's going to impact the rest of the sharing economy companies. The Ubers, the Lyfts, the Airbnbs are at the forefront, and they're dealing with gig workers and on-demand workers who have to be screened because they have access either to sensitive data or to your homes. These companies never assumed that this cost would be a part of their business model. So the screening element that Airbnb has brought in-house and the technology that automates the collecting of social media information to build a profile is the future of how screening is going to be done in the gig economy. What's second in Gorillapreneur news? Expedia and Priceline are stepping up their attacks on Airbnb in the home sharing private accommodation market. Vacation rentals, homes and rooms rented out on a short-term basis, make up about one-fifth of the size of the hotel market in the United States. But it's the fastest growing segment. And so Expedia and Priceline have decided that they're going to try to head off the giant, which is Airbnb, by placing more emphasis on the sharing economy and on the private accommodation market. Revenue for private accommodations grew by 11% last year and is projected to grow at 8% or more, with the market topping out at about $34 billion. The U.S. hotel industry only grew at 5% last year, up to $151 billion, and is projected to do the same next year. So it's a bigger market, hotel rooms, but a slower growth rate. And so Expedia and Priceline want some of that growth. So what are they doing? They're displaying the vacation rentals alongside hotel rooms on the site. The goal is to provide the traveler with a comprehensive listing for the destinations in which they want to travel. Now, Expedia took one step further. They purchased HomeAway in 2015, and they have now listed 1.4 million online bookable listings as a result of that acquisition. HomeAway, after being acquired by Expedia, has seen a 48% increase in online vacation rental bookings in the first quarter compared to last year. Now, that's some significant growth and a reason for Expedia to continue to invest in this market. If you step back and look at what Priceline and Expedia are doing, it's a lot like Trivago. They're giving you everything you may want as a traveler on one platform. Vacation options could include hotels, private homes, custom resorts, all on one screen, while Airbnb, at the current moment, is only giving you those private home options. So they're being outflanked. The question is, how can Airbnb respond? Well, I think they have six potential ways that they could respond to the threat posed by Priceline and Expedia. First, they can offer unique services and experiences with their bookings, and they're starting to do that. In some earlier podcasts, I mentioned some special arrangements that they had made with Caribbean tourism associations. You see that on the website, with experiences now being listed as an additional option. The second thing that they could do is build out unique properties in unique locations. Yes, they could become a builder and go out and build homes in unique places for those millennials who prefer to have a kitchen, which is what about 50% of the people who book on Airbnb prefer, and put those homes in unique places. They could also offer some premium services to premium customers. And if Airbnb carved out a section of the people who use their platform and offered them a premium service where you could home swap with other premium customers, that could create more loyalty into the Airbnb brand. They could also offer other enhanced loyalty benefits. Book three times and you get points that you can use for future bookings. You can also offer homeowners the opportunity to upgrade at discounted prices when they align themselves exclusively with the Airbnb platform. One of the things that you'll see if you stay at the different Airbnb locations is that travelers become accustomed to certain technology, be it Wi-Fi, coffee makers, or Keurig machines. And so if those are common enough that Airbnb can wrap that in a package and promote that to their hosts, that could provide a little bit more consistency when a potential customer books across different locations. And then finally, Airbnb could buy or develop hotels themselves. Not saying that Airbnb needs to go out and become as big as Marriott, but they could partner and create some exclusive arrangements with hotels in unique places that would fit the profile of their business. Now, Airbnb has spent $300 million on Luxury Retreats, a vacation management company with over 4,000 properties that offer a professional concierge service. Airbnb also has another unique strategic option in that they are integrating their listings with Concor, the leading enterprise expense management system. So corporations who are looking to cut a little cost and give their employees some unique lodging options when they travel will not only see hotels, but they will see the Airbnb listings. That's a perfect strategic response to the Expedia and Priceline threat, is to put your offerings on a corporate platform that already lists hotels and giving you the same functionality, the same features as Expedia without having to make those investments. And quite frankly, to operate a business that you don't have a lot of competencies in. Speaking of Airbnb, the Airbnb of the dog walking world just got $65 million in funding. Rover, the dog sitting site that matches owners with the best dog sitters, just got $65 million to make that business model continue to bark. And I love it. The way their business model works is that they match pet owners with pet sitters in the same city, and they take roughly 22% of the transaction each time they make a successful match. They've also introduced what's called Rover Go, a premium service in which Rover photographs the house and build a better online profile for the individuals who will be providing the service. Rover is already doing background checks on the dog sitters. They do that, and they also offer insurance. The service is now the number one dog sitting service in the U.S. and in Canada, and they've expanded outside of just managing dogs. They can support cats, and the CEO said on the Mad Money that they can even host your potbelly pigs. According to American Pet Products Association, pet spending has grown every year since 1994 and has reached $67 billion last year. So this is a huge market, and Rover has raised almost $100 million to grow this business. What's next for these guys? How do they keep growing? Well, they can continue to expand internationally. In previous podcasts, I've talked to you about the Chinese entrepreneur Li Tingting, who launched a dog sharing platform called Mobark. I also mentioned to you the London-based startup Cat in a Flat, the cat sitting service that follows the same business model as Rover, except for it's focused on cats, that's operating in London and has expanded into Dublin. These types of companies make great acquisition targets for Rover. But quite frankly, the bigger opportunity over the long term for Rover may be some of the ancillary services that you can wrap around a business model like this, like specialized dog food, dog care, dog toys. All of these things could be integrated into this model. Okay, what's next in Gorillapreneur News? Startup broker Zego raises about $2 million in funding. This startup broker, Zego, the pay-as-you-go broker that targets drivers who work in the sharing economy, they've raised about $2 million in seed funding, led by venture capital firm Local Globe. Zego provides a pay-as-you-go insurance for drivers and riders who work flexibly with their own vehicles. And they've recently launched its first product, which is underwritten by Avaya. The broker was launched last year to provide insurance for drivers working for the sharing economy companies such as Deliveroo, Uber Eats, Gen, and Amazon. The startup noted that it currently sells a pay-as-you-go product for scooter drivers and added that it's about to launch a motor policy for food and courier delivery drivers who use their cars, which is payable by the hour and is offered nationwide. In one of my earlier podcasts, I mentioned the California-based startup Trove had raised $25 million in Series C funding to provide a homeowner's or renter's insurance to cover individual items such as electronics and jewelry and sporting good items that you could just swipe your credit card and have instant coverage of those items and turn them on and turn them off based on your needs. That is interesting, particularly as the sharing economy continues to evolve and we see trends where now there are more renters in the U.S. market than there are homeowners. So the insurance coverage has to adapt to the needs of the people who will make up the primary workforce out past 2025, and those will be gig workers. So why do I continue to emphasize these on-demand insurance companies? The on-demand insurance companies unbundle coverage for single items the way Apple unbundles music albums with iTunes, opening up options for consumers to rebundle in a preferred playlist that meets their specific needs. This spurs innovation and lowers the barrier to entry for players or suppliers who have traditionally sold their services or products to larger players. Now they can move into the market, ensure a single transaction, play off that profitability, and do it again, and have a lower risk that failure would wipe out their asset or their investment. I love that. Speaking of insuring cars, a new study by Alec Partners estimates that for each car-sharing vehicle on the road, 32 personal vehicle purchases do not occur, which to date has resulted in about 500,000 missed vehicle sales for automotive manufacturers. Alex Partner estimates that by 2020, automakers will miss out on an additional 1.2 million vehicle sales as a result of ride-sharing systems as they begin to mature. As of 2016, 6 million people worldwide were using some form of shared vehicle transportation, and is projected to grow to 30 million by 2020. What does this mean and why is it important? The sharing economy economics are based on a certain percent of cars being available to share. Now, what will happen when the market finally reaches equilibrium? The price of providing shared rides will increase unless there's additional capacity put back in the system to offset the lost automotive vehicle sales. While smartphones and rapidly increasing urban density have driven ride-sharing adoption up until this point, many believe the rapid expansion of automated and driverless cars could be the next catalyst for more car sharing growth in this market. Now, how are the key competitors positioning themselves relative to these trends? Zipcar, which has been owned by Avis since 2013, has been the U.S. market leader in ride-sharing since launching in 1999. But in January of 2016, General Motors launched its competitor to Zipcar, Maven, in 8 markets around the United States and has slowly expanded into 13 cities with over 35,000 members. Additionally, General Motors has invested over $500 million in Lyft and used the Lyft to set up a Maven gig, which offers special pricing to gig economy workers as a way to easily gain access to a vehicle for short stints to do things like deliver groceries and food on demand and provide ride sharing services. Now, this is a great strategy that General Motors has taken. They realize the lost sales, they need additional capacity to sustain the ride-sharing model, so they've launched Maven. They also realize that only 20% of the jobs in the U.S. are reachable by mass transit in 90 minutes, so there's still a need for a car, even for gig workers. And by teaming up with Lyft, they're able to provide a car if you need it to get to a job or to use that car as a means of creating a job for on-demand services like food or grocery delivery. Great tactical response to these market trends by General Motors. Now, Ford's taking a different approach to these same trends with their own tactics. In 2016, they announced the acquisition of Chariot Transit, Inc. Now, Chariot is a commuter shuttle service that utilizes a mobile phone app to allow passengers to book a seat on a shuttle that takes them between home and work during commuting hours. They've launched this in San Francisco. Additionally, Ford has launched Go Bike, a bike sharing system in San Francisco, and they've put out 7,000 bikes and over 400 docking stations around the area. These are some interesting tactics, and I think Ford may have a interesting strategy if you're looking at how the market's going to play out. Increased urbanization is going to bring everything closer to the consumer. So getting to the grocery store, getting to the drugstore may just be a bike ride away. If it takes more than a bike ride, a commuter service is going to be the best way to get people from one side to the other at the cheapest cost. Ford is playing the long game. General Motors is playing the interim game. I'm betting that Ford comes out on top. Wage suppression, the increase in rental over home ownership are all signs that individuals are going to be pressed to invest in more expensive ride-sharing options. The cheaper the options, the more convenient the options, even the redesign of cities are going to play to the strategy that I think Ford is laying out. Now, as a futurist, I can't wait to see if Ford comes out in a better position with the options that they've invested in. Well, speaking of these redesigned cities, these gig workers are going to want cheaper, unique dining options. Earlier in one of my previous podcasts, I mentioned the Chinese startup HomeCook, which seeks to provide a community marketplace for homemade meals. The founder, Tang Wang Li, launched HomeCook in 2014, and it has already notched a $273 million valuation. And essentially, he's providing the option for people to cook at home to share their meals with local professionals who are tired of the traditional dining options. Now there's a U.S. competitor to this service called Shmeal. S-H-M-E-A-L. Shmeal is an app that lets you share your homemade meals with your neighbors and friends for $6. You can cook a meal at your place and post it on the app, and then your neighbors and friends can come over and pick it up. Now this is an interesting concept, as I mentioned it with HomeCook, because it's allowing entrepreneurs who already have capacity in their kitchen after they made their meal to share that meal. I like what these guys are doing. A cook on their app can post a meal ahead of time, and customers can reserve a portion of that meal as soon as it goes live. They also allow their customers to post orders on the app and match up a cook who wants to provide it. They're currently in beta, and they hope to launch this service sometime going into the end of the year. I'm going to have to get these guys, Craig and Justin, on the podcast and see how this service is rolling out. Now, how do you think the market's going to respond to services like this, essentially turning every household into a potential restaurant? I think there are 7 potential responses that the market will have. First, fresh food delivery services will enter this market by offering kits for home chefs. Airbnb would have a vested interest in having their home hosts provide this sort of service as a way of differentiating themselves from some of the other players like Expedia or Priceline. Fresh home delivery services like Blue Apron would figure out how they could be a supplier to homes that want to operate as a restaurant. So I see them trying to align and create products or services to support this trend. I think you're going to see pop-up restaurants continue to be a big trend, particularly in urban communities where you have a ton of commercial space with commercial kitchens. This trend lends itself to having pop-up instant restaurants that last 2 to 3 days that specialize in different cuisine. I think you're going to also see rapid restaurant configuration. A McDonald's can be a McDonald's in the day and can be a completely different restaurant at night. If the restaurant is modular, you'll be able to quickly reconfigure that restaurant into a bar and back to a restaurant by morning time. I think you're going to see more restaurants that operate like a food court, where you have a restaurant within a restaurant and combine some of the great brands under one roof. We see some of that today when you go to the gas station and you see a gas station brand combined with a traditional fast food brand under one roof. We've also seen Pepsi experiment with the food court concept by combining brands that they used to own, Taco Bell, KFC, under one roof to give the consumers more options. I think you're going to see food trucks will offer more experiences with their food tourism. And so that can become a bigger part of the fabric where you see this sort of demand for home-based meals being shared. I think you're going to also see food trucks become a little more diversified and become a delivery service of the ingredients that they offer, the food they serve on their trucks, giving them the opportunity to team up and partner with grocery stores who may see their revenue slide as a result of Amazon's entry and delivery into the market and Amazon's potential use of Whole Foods to deliver home-cooked meals direct to the consumer's home. So food truck combinations with local grocery stores to mimic that and bring services to gig workers would be fantastic. And then finally, I think you're going to see the expansion of grocery run, which are combined grocery stores and restaurants in one setting. So people go to the grocery store and they get the equivalent of an Applebee's right there in the grocery store, flat screens and all, where they can take home-cooked food and consume it right there in the grocery store. So I think you'll see some of these types of trends emerge as apps like Shmeal and Home Cook become more prevalent in disrupting the traditional dining experiences in the U.S. Man, I love the Chinese sharing economy. Man, they must be sharing everything in China, because now they have a bed sharing service. The company Xiang Shui Space is behind the capsules that are used for bed sharing. And these capsules have a fan and a reading light, and customers can book them for 30 minutes during their lunch break to take a nap in these pods. And it kind of looks like you're in a spacecraft when you're decked out in one of these pods. To use the pods, customers must register with the company using a mobile phone number via the social platform WeChat and pay through the app. Unlike bike sharing services Mobike, no deposit is required between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. and the rates are at 10 yuan for the first 30 minutes and 0.33 yuan per minute after that. At other times, it costs 6 yuan for the first 30 minutes and 0.33 yuan for every subsequent minute. Disposable sheets and pillowcases and blankets and earplugs are available, and routine checks are carried out every day by an employee of the company. This is interesting to have a bed sharing service like this, which essentially, to me, opens up the door to you to think about how the home could potentially be sold like a timeshare, using a timeshare model. If gig workers now are preferring to rent, they may end up buying individual rooms in homes and paying a maintenance fee to have access to the public spaces. This model already exists today in condos and apartment complexes, but given the soaring cost of home ownership in the United States, that model may end up being applied to a single family home where individual rooms within the home, private rooms are sold, public spaces are leased out, and it gives people the opportunity of ownership of some aspect of a home. So we'll see if that model plays out. Zheng Shui Space, give me one of those beds. I want to sleep in it. Now my other favorite company, WeWork. These guys just completed a funding round that valued their company at $21 billion. Now WeWork, they operate workspace that can be rented out to members for a monthly fee. The company provides entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers meeting rooms and privacy booths, free coffee, and networking events. Renting from WeWork offers incentives besides simply just having a desk to use. They handle all your overhead, the cost of internet, mail, package, printing, cleaning, and more. The most powerful aspect of the WeWork is that you get to network with the other entrepreneurs who are sharing the space with you. Now, why do I emphasize that? I expect WeWork in the coming years to become tied to the hip with the new gig staffing companies who will look at the WeWork campuses as fertile ground for staffing specialized projects. For example, can you imagine a Huntsville, Alabama WeWork campus hosting air and space tenants and getting pulled into those types of projects? The leaders of those projects then would turn and staff individual short-term projects from the entrepreneurs and experts who are working out of that particular specialized campus. These tasks, when they're done, are wrapped up, and these specialized gig workers would continue to use the WeWork campus as a way to sustain their business. It gives you a working culture and environment that can be impactful to the companies that want to come back and utilize teams, groups, or even an entire location. That's just how I see the market evolving. Well, this has been Guerrillapreneur News, with insights and some of my future predictions of how markets may evolve and the tactics that companies are going to use to respond to the changing sharing on-demand economy. And please check out some of our other segments within the podcast. our mastermind interviews, where we go head to head with entrepreneurs who are driving the sharing economy forward, and then our segment on Slaying the Giant, where I talk to you specifically about tactics that you can use in your business to take on the corporate giant. Guerrillapreneurs, if you're not out there breaking something, your company might be the next thing that gets broken. Keep fighting.
Thank you for listening to the Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow Mark Peterson on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Guerrillapreneur. Now I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first, then seek to win. Keep fighting, guerrillapreneurs!